हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्थमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Chapter 7, Evidence Regarding Devotional Principles, page 83. So a bona fide spiritual master should not personally take responsibility for constructing temples. But if someone has money and wants to spend it in the service of Krishna, an acharya like Rupa Goswami may utilize the devotee's money to construct a nice costly temple for the service of the Lord. Unfortunately, it happens that someone who is not fit to become a spiritual master may approach wealthy persons to contribute for temple constructions. If such money is utilized by unqualified spiritual masters for living comfortably in costly temples without actually doing any preaching work, this is not acceptable. In other words, a spiritual master needn't be very enthusiastic for constructing temple buildings simply in the name of so-called spiritual advancement. Rather, his first and foremost activity should be to preach. In this connection, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj recommended that a spiritual master print books. If one has money, instead of constructing costly temples, one should spend his money for the publication of authorized books in different languages for propagating the Krishna consciousness movement. Right? So he uses it for books and preaching. Whatever money he has, somehow or another at his disposal, he's using for the preaching. Then those who are being preached to, if they come forward and then they want to do things, then you can do.
Yes.
Like we're seeing here, Rupa Goswami is preaching, and then Man Singh appreciates that, he builds a temple.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? So he sees Prabhupada, he went there, he just started with whatever it is, and then he just had that little place, and then he just starts preaching.
Yes.
Like this, they develop the books, they do like this, and then slowly things start to develop. Right, so it's not about those things, it's about the preaching. Preaching is the main. Or we see also, like in Chopati, then Maharaj there, then they just started in somebody's little apartment, and then just preached. And from that, then the community, as it grew, they started to arrange things for the temple.
Yes.
Until, you know, they have a nice complex now, and then other projects are going on, but that's all being done by the community. Like that. So like that's the whole point. Is that the spiritual master should be focused on preaching. Others may do the other aspects because that's what they can do. That's what keeps them busy.
Can we have a bona fide spiritual master who is not focused on preaching?
But what would he be focused on? Means if he's just sitting and doing bhajan and studying and just doing a small kind of, you know, association and preaching, that may happen according to their nature and their facility or their health or things like that.
Yes.
But if they're just engaged in material kind of activities and all that, then you wouldn't consider that very ideal.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Because you do have some that they just can't physically go out and move about, so then they sit in one place and do stuff. And that works.
Can you also say that in the same way that there are different levels of disciples, you can also have different levels of person who have the, you can say, the service of Diksha Guru? But
yeah, it means you start at standard and then you go up from there.
Yes.
You know? And also then they only initiate those who are standard. So you might have those who are not up to standard yet, then they're devotees of the community and all this, but they may not be initiated.
Yes.
Like that. So the same way that a spiritual master, there's a standard there, and then from there, then it goes up. Because it has to be understood is that that higher that level, then the easier it is for the disciples to make advancement.
Yes.
Right? If the spiritual master is a Madhyama, then the disciples will always be able to make advancement because he'll be ahead of them.
Yes.
But if he's a neophyte, then he can only teach up to what he knows. So as long as he's progressing, then and it's ahead of the disciples, it'll work. It's not recommended, but it'll work like that. But we have the advantage, that's the whole point of the founder Acharya, then the instructions are that of an Uttamadhikari.
Yes, yes.
So therefore the Madhyamas and Kanishthas are preaching that. So how clearly you're sticking to the directions of Srila Prabhupada, then that will make it effective.
Yes.
But if you're making up your own stuff, then it will be less effective.
Yes, yes. Hmm? My, if there is no founder Acharya, especially in Kaliyuga, it's very... Because we can see that many people can initiate without having means inspired to initiate without any, I can say, acceptance from the parentage.
Generally, it's not recommended.
Yes.
Because the point is that then what's the point? Why are they doing? You know, what would be the thing? Because unless they're following Prabhupada's instructions, how will it work?
Yes.
You know, but if they're following the instructions but doing it out on their own and that, it could work, but it wouldn't be recommended because then you don't have that strong association, that strong all these other aspects that are so, you know, vital to development.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you know, it may happen. But that it can only happen because of what Prabhupada's talking about, and then they should be trying to preach and things like that. Yeah. So as much as they're connecting to that, it'll work. And what they're not, then that's where it'll be weak. Jiva Goswami's commentary. Though the topic under discussion in the Bhagavatam is sannyas dharma, and therefore the three rules apply to a renounced person, the rules are also applicable to other devotees. In any case, this rule means that one should not accept unqualified disciples. This is because we see examples of Narada and others taking disciples, though they were renounced. The rule was literally followed, and no disciples were made, then the sampradaya would be destroyed because there would be no lineage. Consequently, there would be an appearance of false knowledge. Thus, the rule that a devotee should not be attached to making disciples actually means that the devotee should not accept unqualified disciples in order to increase the numbers in one's sampradaya.
Yes.
The injunction that one should not study many scriptures means that one should not study scriptures other than Vaishnava scriptures, scriptures opposed to Bhagavatam. The injunction about big projects should be similarly interpreted. Footnote 31. Big projects pleasing to the Lord can be undertaken. You know, it's just, it should be about the Lord. This book should be about that. Association should be about that. Right? So the disciples aren't qualified. They're not good association. Right? And they're not looking for good association. So the whole idea is it has to be centered around Krishna.
Yes.
But still, the whole point is that they have the you know, some means to be able to do that. Right? They have the ability to get, they have facility, they have others who are involved and things like that. Or meaning here is the spiritual master doesn't need to take that role. He's just preaching. You know, he can inspire others and then they're doing, but he doesn't need to do it himself. And as far as other Vaishnavas go, is that they would only take up these if they also felt they had the ability, then there was the facility. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Primarily the sannyas dharma is to focus on to see Krishna and, you know, to preach about Krishna.
Preach about
similarly
that.
With other devotees.
Yeah.
So it's actually only that things which are in direct connection or which will help you to direct towards Krishna we do. Because the most of the things which are mentioned are may be a cause of distraction.
Yes, they may be a cause.
Yes.
They don't have to, if they're done for Krishna they're not. But the point is that are we able to do it? The Goswamis go through all the Vedic literatures and then they bring out and then quote from them what's useful.
Yes.
Right? So that's the problem that means that they've done the research. We're not, we call it research, but we're not doing research. You know, we're just going through and reading and compiling things and like that. So we don't have that capacity, so we should stick to what we can actually use in Krishna's service. And the rule is don't go reading so many things just so you can quote and give good arguments or impress people or say something no one's heard or like that. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the whole point. So always these things have that full range of depending upon who they're connected with. Right? So it means that's the point is nectar devotion. It's being presented about the Uttamadhikari, but it also presents, you know, all along for everybody. That's the point. Principles always apply. Details sometimes apply, sometimes don't. But principles always apply. So. 1.2.1.14. Not feeling miserable and not performing degraded acts in distressing circumstances, from verse 18, illustrated in the Padma Purana. Being undisturbed when one does not attain food or clothing, or when these things are lost. One should remember the Lord with one's intelligence. But instead of getting disturbed, you don't get food or clothing. You just, this Krishna has a plan. There's just some arrangement is there. You just wait. So you have to remember with one's intelligence, because one's disturbed, so that's the mind. So you have to use the intelligence to control the mind. Right? Srila Prabhupada. Straightforwardness in ordinary dealings and equilibrium in loss and gain. There's a statement in the Padma Purana. Persons who are engaged in Krishna consciousness should never be disturbed by some material gain or loss. Right? So if you get gain and you get all distracted, then better not to have the gain. Even if there is some material loss, one should not be perturbed, but should always think of Krishna within himself. The purport is that every conditioned soul is always absorbed in thinking of materialistic activities. He has to free himself from such thoughts and transfer himself completely to Krishna consciousness. As we have already explained, the basic principle of Krishna consciousness is to always think of Krishna. One should not be disturbed in material loss, but rather should concentrate his mind upon the lotus feet of the Lord. Jiva Goswami's commentary. This injunction applies to the devotee practicing smaram, smaranam, etc. The devotee absorbed in service, however, will perform service according to the materials he attains, and thus will make efforts to obtain those items if these items are not present, instead of simply remaining indifferent to loss or lack of those items. It should be understood this injunction also means that he should not perform low actions with the prominence of begging and such. So it's not that items are lost, but if they're items for Krishna consciousness or useful in that, he's making the endeavor. But if he gets them or not, he's not lamenting. The point is he's using them in Krishna's service, he's remembering Krishna. So that which is within one's duty, one's obtaining those things, if he gets them, he gets. If he doesn't get, he's not. That doesn't mean if he doesn't get, then he just doesn't worry about it. Right? If it's his duty. If it's not his duty, and he wants, then when he doesn't get, then he should start to think, maybe he's not supposed to have. Or there's some other, you know, Krishna has some, there's some reason. 1.2.1.15. Not being controlled by lamentation or other emotions, from verse 80, also illustrated in the Padma Purana. How is it possible for Mukunda to appear in the mind of a person whose mind is afflicted with lamentation, anger, or other emotions? Srila Prabhupada. A devotee should not be subjected to lamentation or illusion. There is the following statement, the Padma Purana. Within the heart of a person who is overpowered by lamentation or anger, there's no possibility of Krishna's being manifested. Because you're... There's lamentation, it's about the thing that's lost. So if there's anger, there's about the specific, the detail that's there. You know, some material perfection. Right? So it's either some loss of something that you thought would make good perfection or, you know, yeah, either way, whichever way you go. If you're in passion, you get angry. If you're in ignorance, you lament. So it's over that something that you want is not there. There's a frustration in gaining what you want, mm-hmm. or keeping what you want, right?
Yes.
So then that focus on that secondary, we forget Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the point. So it's not possible. That's why in goodness, then, you're situated that this is your duties, you're doing, and things come and go. That's just the way the material world works. 1.2.1.16. Not disrespecting the devatas from verse 81, illustrated in Padma Purana. One should always worship Hari, the Lord of the masters of all the devatas. On the other hand, one should never disrespect Brahma, Shiva, and others. So you only worship Hari, but that doesn't mean you disrespect the demigods. You just don't worship them. Right? Because they're all servants of the Lord. So that aspect you're respecting, but you don't have to worship. You're worshiping Krishna, Srila Prabhupada, the demigods. One should not neglect to offer due respects to the demigods. One may not be a devotee of demigods, but that does not mean that he should be disrespectful to them. For example, a Vaishnava is not a devotee of Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, but he is duty-bound to offer all respects to such highly positioned demigods. According to Vaishnava philosophy, one should offer respects even to an ant.
Mm-hmm.
So then, what is there to speak of such exalted persons as Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma? In the Padma Purana it is said, Krishna, or Hari, is the master of all demigods, and therefore he is always worshipable. But this does not mean that one should not offer respect to the demigods. Right? So Krishna is worshipable, but the demigods are respected.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Not that, oh, respect means we have to worship. It's also interesting here, Prabhupada says, Krishna or Hari.
Yes.
Right? Because the verse says Hari.
Yes.
He says Krishna or Hari. We would go Hari or Krishna. Right?
Yes. You know, yes.
That's how we would translate. Prabhupada said, Krishna or Hari. 1.2.1.17. Not inflicting pain on other living entities, from verse 81, illustrated from the Mahabharata. That pure person who does not inflict pain on others, being merciful like a father to his son, quickly pleases the master of the senses. Srila Prabhupada. Not giving pain to any living entity. This is the statement of Mahabharata. Quote, a person who does not disturb or cause painful action in the mind of any living entity, who treats everyone just like a loving father, does his children, whose heart is so pure, certainly very soon becomes favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So that means, because in passion or ignorance, you won't do this, because you can gain something from someone, so you're nice, you can't gain, so you don't, you're angry, so then you don't, because here it says, or cause painful action in the mind of any living entity. Right? So that means you don't try to upset the other person.
Yes.
You do what you're doing, they may become upset. Like Duryodhana becomes upset, Yudhishthira just is serving Krishna.
Yes.
But he doesn't do anything to upset him.
Yes.
Right? You know, just like, you know, you're saying something and then there's that thing and then just as you leave you make that last little comment to give that last little, you know, dig or turn or, you know, something like that. So Krishna's saying, don't do that. Right? Be nice. You know, you do what he has to be done, you speak, but you don't have to make the other person upset. Right? You're upset doesn't mean you have to make everybody else upset. Maybe popular, but not necessary. Right?
It's not always easy enough to be nice to people who are not nice.
Yeah, that's the thing. In so-called civilized society, there is sometimes agitation against cruelty to animals. But at the same time, regular slaughterhouses are always maintained. A Vaishnava is not like that. A Vaishnava can never support animal slaughter or even give pain to any living entities. Because like, cruelty to animals, but it's certain animals. You know, it's not that animals in general. Right? You know, because if they take animals in general, then they take it too extreme. Right? So you have the philanthropic, you know, or the animal rights people, but they're meat eaters, you know, on one side. Or on the other side, you have the vegan, where they won't have anything to do with animals. At the same time, they're not actually nice to animals. They're saying they're not cruel to them, but they're also not, they don't care about them. The other one cares, but then they eat them. So he's just, you know, it's just, So that's the problem with the mundane concepts, is that they come up with these strange approaches. So you have to take Shastra. Shastra will tell what's the appropriate thing. Does that make sense? Otherwise, you know, what's the appropriate attitude and all that. So, yeah. Chapter 8. Offenses to be avoided. 1.2.18. Avoiding seva and nama aparads, for verse 81, illustrated in the Varaha Purana. The devotee should avoid the offenses in deity worship described by me, O earth, at all times and with great care. Srila Prabhupada, in the supplementary Vedic literature, there is the following list of 32 offenses in the matter of serving the Lord. 1. One should not enter the temple of the deity in a car or palanquin or with shoes on the feet, right? Because it's about respecting the Lord. So then you have to come in, take that humble position. 2. One should not fail to observe the various festivals for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such as Janmashtami and Rath Yatra. 3. One should not avoid bowing down before the deity. Like something happening, busy, you don't. But this thing of where, maybe while I'm talking to them, I need to bow down? That kind of thing. Where it's like you're doing one thing and on the side thing you're trying to figure out if you can get out of bowing down.
Yes.
Yeah, that one. What I did before, do I have to do again? Yeah, all those ones. 4. One should not enter the temple to worship the Lord without having washed one's hands and feet after eating. Mm-hmm. Right, so you always have to be clean, mm-hmm. right? Because the Lord's clean in that. Okay. 5. One should not enter the temple in a contaminated state. According to the Vedic scripture, if someone dies in the family, the whole family becomes contaminated for some time, according to its status. For example, if the family's like, you know, according to their, because they generally tend to, you know, their mood is not so good. They tend to lament. Right? And stuff like that. For example, if the family is Brahmana, their contamination period is 12 days. For the Kshatriya and Vaishyas, it is 15 days, and for Shudras, 30 days, because that's how long they'll actually be upset. Does that make sense?
Right. For many Indian families, the Shudra families, they follow for 1 year.
Wow. Very attached. Yeah, so these are the standard things like that. Now, if one is following a vow, like one's, you know, pujari, he does puja every day, then this doesn't apply.
Yes.
But if one's not, that then it may apply. So you have to see. If you every day you go to Mangal Artik and all that, then that doesn't necessarily apply. It just has to see. If one's so affected that if you're just going to stand from the deity and all you see is the departed relative, it, you know, like that, then better don't go. Better to see Krishna rather than, yeah. For instance. Yeah, contaminate, yeah, state, or, you know, if one's, for instance, from the previous, if one's not clean, one hasn't taken a bath, any of these kind of things. So here we can see is that there's the physical contamination, the mental contamination. You know, if you're a Mayavadi, better you also don't go in the temple. Like that. Right. Intellectual contamination. Yeah. 7. One should not circumambulate in front of Sri Krishna. The process of circumambulating in the temple is that one should begin circumambulating from the deity's right side of the temple and come around. Such circumambulation should be performed outside the temple structure at least 3 times daily. So it has to be outside, you know, where the deities are. So you don't do, so then you would have the aspect is that it's not in front of the deity. So one could say, as it's pointed out here, it has to be outside the structure the deity's in. Right? You know, like we have facility that there's complete Garbhagriha and then you can go around it. Some temples don't have that, you go outside. So you give the idea you don't do that inside the deity room. Like that. Or, you know, it's commonly seen in front of the deity, someone else is there respecting them, you're circumambulating them. That's not there. That's why we close during Tulsi Puja. Right? But that doesn't mean that devotees are doing kirtan and they're dancing and going in a big circle, that's circumambulation, so therefore it's totally bogus and then they should all be put on a rocket and sent to Mars. I mean, Pluto would be better, but, you know, we have to be practical.
You forget the six. One should not bow down in one.
Oh, yes. One should not bow down on one hand.
Well, actually, one devotee told me that it's sometimes it's good to put one hand and the other like that.
Yeah, but then there's two hands.
But one, two hands are not touching the floor. Only one is touching the floor.
Is your mind touching the floor?
No.
So that's part of the obeisances. That's focused on the deities.
Yes.
Yeah, the point is one's on top of the other, like that. That's one way of doing it, the two together, or you put them together like that. Okay. You know, whichever way, they both work. So the idea is that one hand is that you have one hand, and the other hand you're holding something, like beads. They'll take their beads and hold them and put them behind their back, or do something far out. You know, because the beads have to be as far away from the floor as possible. So that's the kind of thing, because you're carrying something, so you just do. So no, you put that down, offer obeisances and that. Or if not, you can't put it down, you take it in wherever it's going, to the deity room or this, or you're taking it out and putting some, then you come back in, offer obeisances. You know, like that.
If you think for the feet, it sounds good to do like that for the feet.
You can. I think the Shris do Madhu that.
Huh?
Madhu's also. Like that. That's part of Dandabats. So that would be the full on the ground. Mm. Then you'll generally see when they put their hands also cross the thumbs. Because the idea is that it's like a stick, a single stick, so you're trying to make it like that. But crossing the feet generally means that it can be just, you know, the toes, that part of the foot. Some will put it up high. Like that. That's been explained to me by some and refuted by some, that was more used where you put it all the way up where the other foot's behind the ankle of the other one. Mm-hmm. That was more used by the ladies to make sure this cloth didn't move. As opposed to just one on the toes of one foot are on top of the other.
Yes.
But it's not that it can't be used, but I've been told that that's primarily why they would do it, to keep the cloth down.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not so important. But it's not so much our tradition.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bona fide tradition, but it's not that you have to do it like this. For us, they have to do it like that, because that's their tradition, but we don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But if you do, it's fine, but don't propagate it as one's new thing to, how you say, one's uniqueness that makes you a Muni, over all others. Because sometimes we see that. We catch a secondary rule and then we try to push it that it's so important. Well, it's not.
Yes.
Point is the feet should be together.
Yes.
You know, it shouldn't be that you're, you know, doing a, how you say, doing a, you know, snow angel, but on your stomach, you know. Does that make sense? So, like that. The hands are either, you know, together that way, you know, we said where one's on top of the other, or they're next to each other touching. Or, and also by that, it can be just the thumbs that also does that. That also does the thing, the thumbs crossing the thumbs, because you have another fun thing where it did, is that Manu mentions about how the right hand touches the right foot of the guru and the left hand touches the left foot of the guru. Right? So therefore you see some devotees in doing this, then they will cross their arms. It means literally it's like the forearms are crossed and they're touching, like, you know, they have, so their fingers are, you know, quite a bit apart, you know, like, what do you call it? Like 40, 50 centimeters apart or like that. So then the problem comes is, does that mean the spiritual master is practicing martial arts and he's standing in a horse stance where his feet are that far apart? It means his feet are touching each other.
Yes.
That means the distance between one foot and the other is nothing. So to touch the one with the one and the one on the other, that by crossing, when you put your right hand down first and then the left hand on top of that, and they're on top of each other, that, if you check, the ends of your fingers would be on the right foot and the left foot.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's all. It's already included in the tradition.
Yes.
Like that. But then you see devotees doing this whole thing, and you can see as they're really, really, you know, going for the bobs are really happening and all that flowing. You know, it's like, you got to step out of the way, your cloth will get wet. You know. So it's just like, you know, you want to be careful. So it's already there in the tradition. Or if not, when they're doing the other way, when they're putting the palms together, then they cross the thumbs. If you want to consider that as a consideration. So that's what you're dealing with. Like that. Does that make sense?
But the way the end to put like that, you know?
Because the right touches the left and the left touches the right. So that means they have to be together. Yeah. You put them together, just put it together.
Yes.
I mean, sometimes maybe someone's in such, you know, so enthusiastic, they just offer bases. It doesn't matter. They're offering Dandabhas, the mood's right.
Yes.
But if they want to be technical, then they do like that.
Yes.
But if it's just technical without the mood, then what's the point?
Yes. Yes.
You know, hopefully the mood will come by practicing that. But if they think that that's what makes it, if you don't do it, it's bogus, then it's a problem.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So the tradition already includes, we don't have to make our own tradition. We don't have to. No need. Okay. 8. One should not spread his legs before the deities. Right? Because it's always, it's gentle that the legs are crossed. Right? You know, that's the... 9. One should not sit before the deity holding the ankles, elbows, and knees with one's hands. Okay, so they're not open, but, you know, you can't sit nice, so they'll sit there with the, like that, because that thing of where you're crossing, or that mudra generally is not used in front of the deities. Where you cross your arms, you know, like that, because that's the determination, and there's, I'm doing this. You know, it's like used for sankalpa, so we generally don't use it. So then it's not. So you don't do these things. It means you may have new people who are coming and sitting. Don't bother them because they can't sit any other way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or get them a chair.
Yes.
Like that. One should not lie down before the deity. You know, he's there. You take proper darshan. One should not accept prasad before the deity. So you don't sit down and eat, you know, a proper meal and that or anything like that. You have the charinamrita or that little something like that you do. But generally, you might go to the side. You generally see people get it and then go to the side. Like that. So, yeah.
In the West?
Yes.
It presents you as a servant. Generally, it's an etiquette in front of the master.
You don't eat, yeah. Yeah. Like that also. Yeah. From that just idea of the servant. Yeah, it's like the servant serves prasad, then they go somewhere else to eat.
Yeah.
They don't, after he's washed his hands, sit right down there in front of him and start eating. Go away. And like that. Hey, could you give me some of this? Yeah. You don't do that. One should never speak a lie before the deity. Because Krishna knows, so you can't cheat him. 13. One should not talk very loudly before the deity. Hey, talk how much you need to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it means it's appropriate. You don't talk loudly because, you know, you have to get something done or this or that. Go over to the, you want to talk, you go over to the person. Don't shout from across the temple.
Mm-hmm.
14. One should not talk with others before the deity. Right? If you're talking about Krishna, then that's fine. But just talking other stuff, just to talk like that, mm-hmm. You know. Yeah. One should not cry or howl before the deity. Right? So then lamenting and all this and, you know, like that. Your pet hamster died. You know, you don't do that. You don't come in the temple and like that. 16. One should not quarrel or fight before the deity. One should not chastise anyone before the deity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because Krishna is the, you know, one who does all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Generally all these things represent that you're not aware that the deity is...
Yes. Yes, you get distracted, so you get so overcome that you start shouting or farting or arguing or just talking nonsense or, you know, like that. So that's the whole idea. 18. One should not be charitable to beggars before the deity. Right? Because then you're the big man giving charity. No, Krishna is the one. One should not speak very harshly to others before the deity. 20. You know, so that means even if it's something, so chastising anyone just because, you know, they upset you, but then something to do with the deity, even they're doing something wrong, you still should not be very, very harsh before the deity. Right? One should not wear a fur blanket before the deity.
Mm-hmm.
So a fur blanket, you have the element, because generally it's a blanket, then they're wool, so they tend to be, you know, roughly done, so the hairs come out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Krishna doesn't like those hairs all over the place. Right? Because they'll blow around, they'll get on him, you're doing your puja, this and that, they fall into things like that. So that's one of the things. The other thing is there is that you don't wear the wool blanket, means the blanket that you slept in. So you don't sleep in the blanket and then put it on, and then go do puja. Does that make sense? Because that's the thing, the chadar is technically a blanket. Right, so the chadars that you wear in the temple and the chadars you sleep in generally are two different things. Right, like that. If the wool is very, very fine, it can be used, but it has to be super fine. Means, you know, well, how you say, well, yeah, well spun, well woven, you know, fine stuff. It can't be all the short ends, because generally the finer stuff goes into the chadars that we use for, you know, wearing as our with our clothing, and the rougher stuff that goes into blankets, like that. The really rough one, the horse blankets, you know, like that. The horses get those ones, right? Yeah, because you're also looking at, you have those who are living simply, or those who renounce and all that. So they have to be careful about this. So they have to cease, because they only have rough stuff. So they have to be careful not to wear that when they're doing puja and stuff. They have to have something that's not so rough. 21. One should not eulogize or praise anyone else before the deity. One should not speak. Okay.
Maharaj, can we say that except to glorify the devotee?
That's there. But that's in connection with Krishna and all that. But we're not eulogizing and praising one else, because then, you know, like the life member and praising him, how great he is, because now he'll give a nice donation. Don't do that then. Do that, you know, outside. Because now you can take darshan and interest him there in Krishna. Then because he's so interested, now when you get to the office, now you can eulogize him and tell him how fabulous he is. Right. 22. One should not speak ill names before the deity. Right. One should not pass air before the deity. 24. One should not fail to worship the deity according to one's means. In Bhagavad Gita 9:26, it is stated that the Lord is satisfied if some devotee offers him even a leaf or a little water. This formula prescribed by the Lord is universally applicable, even for the poorest man. But this does not mean that one who has sufficient means to worship the Lord very nicely should also adopt this method and try to satisfy the Lord simply by offering water and a leaf. If he has sufficient means, he should offer nice decorations, nice flowers, nice foodstuffs, and observe all ceremonies. It is not that one should try to satisfy the Supreme Lord with a little water and leaf, and for himself spend all his money in sense gratification. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because one always has to be careful with this, because they'll say, oh, all these Vedic things, and it's all very technical in that, we're Westerners, we don't do all this stuff. And besides, Krishna says, you know, leaf, flower, fruit, water, that's actually only what he wants. All this other stuff he doesn't really need. You know, he's God, he's got all this stuff anyway. So therefore, we don't have to do all this. And so it's proper that we only offer all that. That, you know, means all that means just the water and the leaf. But Prabhupada, you know, already made this point long time ago, that don't do that.
Most of the Hindus do.
Yeah, it's a very common thing. The Hindus, they always tend to. Yeah, you know, it's that. No, but it says here. So they get that little, it's the stinkiest plate you can find, the little stinkiest, the smallest amount of things on there and everything. Everything's just so like that. But the rest of the house is really, really well done. Yeah. So Krishna's giving this, that he'll accept this. If you have nothing else, then even this. The point is this universal. Everybody can get some water or tulsi leaf like this. So something can be got. So even the poorest man can worship the Lord and feel that he's doing his best. But if you have more, then you see like Ambarish Maharaj, then very elaborate, very wonderful puja and everything like that. So the point is you find where you fit in between. Like that. Now, so whatever you're cooking, you're offering to the deities, like this, you know, whatever you get, like that. 25. One should not eat anything which is not offered first to Krishna. Right? So you're worshipping Krishna, and then anything you get, you're offering to Krishna. 26. One should not fail to offer fresh fruit and grains to Krishna according to season. So you're up on what's in season, that's what you're getting and offering to Krishna. Like that, you know. And, you know, unless you're in Hong Kong, then everything's in season because they nothing grows there, right?
Yeah. So, Mark, this is an indication that it is better to offer to the deity what is always in season.
Yes, what's in season. It means if where you live, nothing's... Like if you live on Svalbard, nothing's in season except ice. So then you can make on a daily basis, you know, ice cones for Krishna and all that. You know?
But this indicates that, for example, for the fruits, it's better to have the fruits who are locally produced?
It means it's there, but if you don't have... It doesn't mean that you can't offer the other ones. But the point is, if the ones that are locally produced, those must always be offered.
Yes.
Whatever is from the locale that's offerable, you know, then that's what you offer. And then if you have other things, then those can also be offered. But you just have to see is if there's a natural time when, let's say strawberries are there, you know, for so many months. But at the beginning, you know, and they're there for forever, right? You know, like whatever it is, you're available for, you know, 8-10 months or something. But you see, the first month they're always sour, and the last month they're sour, then forget those. Just do when they're cooked. In other words, they're bringing from some place that first produces them, but they're not ready yet, but because they're first, you can get more money, so people will get them. But once they're in season, then they have some places around the world they're in season, and you're getting them, then it works. But in the locale, if something's in season, then you always offer that. You know, in a way that's either it's something offerable or in a way that's nice. Like some places in Europe, they have all these far out little berries. But some of them are super sour. You know, so you might offer some sugar along with it. Like that. You know? Yeah, maybe the locals like it super sour, you know. But, you know, it's just like the Indians like it hot and then they like it sour, you know, so, you know, put a little sugar.
So, Mark, this indicates that sometimes, you know, if we have money, we can buy food that we like.
Right.
And not to take the local one.
Yes, but the local should also be used if it's, you know, it's proper stuff. It means if the local is in season as durian, then you might not offer it. And don't worry that there's any offense here.
Yes,
exactly. Yeah, so if it's something weird, you know, it's Limburger cheese season, so, you know, you don't offer that, then, you know, that's fine. Does that make sense?
Generally, when we are offering according to season, like, for example, we go to a place, we know what is famous then. We are looking forward for it. Okay, we have... There is an endeavor, there is a consciousness effort involved in getting that.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the main reasons. Like, first that you get it and
offer it to the Lord, yeah. Yeah, man, that's good. That's a good point also. Or if you live in one of those places, then you should always be offering that thing to the Lord. Because it also will say, here's something favorite... You know, some item or foodstuffs that's favorite, you know, then that's offered, you know, special. Okay. So just because it's important for you and you made all that endeavor, then you still offer it to Krishna first. Is that what you're saying?
No, it's a natural tendency. Like, most of the people are farmers and all. They get their first yield, so they offer.
Mm-hmm.
And then those who are connected to them also, like, you know that, okay, the first deal is coming, now I want to buy it for myself because that will be fresh, good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is that important significance
right.
We give.
Yeah. So then you offer that to Krishna first. So that means when you're on the train and you're going through Nagpur, make sure you offer the oranges. You're going through Allahabad, you offer the guavas. Okay. I was saying. You're going through Tundla and the what do you call it? The Alutipas. Yeah, like that. Okay.
The market is in the train.
Huh?
In the train, everything happens.
Yeah, everything happens. Yeah. It's all happening on the train. Yeah. 27. After food has been cooked, no one should be offered any foodstuffs unless it is first offered to the deity. So always he's given first. 28. One should not sit with his back towards the deity. One should not offer obeisances silently to the spiritual master. Or in other words, one should recite aloud the prayers of the spiritual master while offering obeisances. Right? So that's there, because then the focus is there. Because the mind is part of the obeisance. And if you say it silently, you might be thinking of something else and you don't even remember that you said it, or even that you offered obeisances or like that. So by saying it out loud, it doesn't mean it has to be so loud everybody in the temple can hear. It means it's loud enough you can hear. So it's like japa. You know, it's loud enough that you're aware you're saying it. Does that make sense? 30. One should not fail to offer some praise in the presence of the spiritual master. Okay, so something should be said. You know, that respect, that surrender, that looking. 31. You know, so we see this is the offenses to the deities, right? So, because the spiritual master is our connection to the deity. 31. One should not praise himself before the spiritual master. Yeah. Yeah, so this is not in front of the deities, this is just any time. Right? 32. One should not deride the demigods before the deity. Okay, so that's the 32. This is the list of 32 offenses. Besides these, there are a number of offenses which are mentioned in the Varaha Purana. These ones for Padma, right?
Extra Varaha.
Oh, so it's all Varaha. Yes, okay. Like that. How you say? Yeah, it just goes on. I'm not sure if it mentions it here. There's so many rules. So just the main principle rules have been mentioned here. Just like there's so many services you can do, Angus the Bhakti, but only the main are given the 64. So I'm just saying. Okay, so then there are a number of offenses which are mentioned in the Varaha Purana. They are as follows. One should not touch the deity in a dark room, right? Because if the room is dark and you don't know what's going on, you don't want anyone to touch you, so then don't touch the deities. So see, the lights are turned on. Otherwise, you go in, do something, and that, no, you have to go in, light the lamp, see that. So you want to just be quick and practical and like that, so you go in, no, don't do that. 2, one should not fail to strictly follow the rules and regulations in worshiping the deity. Right? So don't just be relaxed or things like that. 3, one should not enter the temple of the deity without first making some sound. Because it's just normal. When you go into a room, you knock first, you make a sound. And that, I remember some Bengali gentleman was saying, and I saw it also in others, just in the cultured families in India, that before going into a room, the men would always make a sound. Like that. Especially if there were ladies inside. Like that. They'd knock or they'd do some kind of something to make a sound. Yeah, they'd always clear their throat, something, to, just so that they know that this. Yeah.
Inside also, some homes, before the door, there are decorations with some kind of bells or anything.
Oh, no, don't touch those. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. 4, one should not offer any foodstuff to the deity which has been seen by dogs or other lower animals. Because they're lusty, they want to eat it. So they've already, yes. 5, so that's why you always cover. You know, you have the cloth that you cover. Even if it's just, it's just quick from here to there. No, it's always covered. No one should see. Okay. 5, one should not break silence while worshiping. So it means, silence means that it's about Krishna. So you shouldn't break silence. It's either you're saying nothing or it's concerning the worship or, you know, something to do with that. You don't just start talking anything else. I remember as I was doing something with there, because it was next to the door, I was doing some worship there. And then one of the other devotees came in and, you know, started talking. At first it was about Krishna, and then they got into something until I got really, was getting really upset about something. And Janani Vasprabhu came along and he goes, okay, go outside and talk all these things. just booted us out. Because you're not supposed to talk anything other than what relates to the deity, you know, in the deity. One should not pass urine or evacuate while engaged in worshiping. Right? So that you know, it's obvious if you're in the deity room, but it means when you're worshiping, you don't go out to go to the bathroom and come back. If it happens, you do, but the point is you should try to arrange your schedule so that doesn't happen. You know, so that 1.5 liters that, you know, if you drink this, you'll be really healthy and all that, don't drink that before going into the deity room. Drink it afterwards. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, you try to regulate your life so that while you go into the deity room, the whole time you're there, you don't have to leave to go to the bathroom. Right? 7. One should not offer incense without offering some flour. Right? Because the smell of the incense has come from the, you know, the earth, which is in the flowers. You know, generally, as they take the flowers, then those oils, they make incense. So the point is they go together. But, like that, because you have dupe and you have ganda. So this fragrance should always be there. Like that.
That makes sense. Dupe sticks we offer without offering flowers in the beginning. But it is the ganda which we offer with the flower?
They go together, but also even incense. You see, like the dupe artic, you have to have flowers. So it'll be incense, lamp, and flowers, or at least incense and lamp. You won't just incense only in the proper offering. You might light some incense just to give a fragrance to the room, like that. But in actual, when you're doing the items of worship, then they always have to go together. 8. Useless flowers without any fragrance should not be offered, right? So you always try to get ones that have fragrance, right? So as time goes, that may be harder and harder, but, you know, you try.
Many of the other sambra, they get upset when we offer this marigold.
They do have a fragrance, but you have to like marigold. Some like the fragrance, and some, it's, you know, it's not something
actually
special.
In Mayapur, they have fragrance.
Exactly, everything. It depends where you grow them. Like that. Like in the West, I don't think anything has any fragrance. Mm-hmm. Like that. It looks great. You know, it's a, you know, it's like the social status. It looks fabulous, but no substance, you know. Yeah, like that. Yeah, so if you can, you always prefer flowers that have fragrance. You can use others for decoration and that, and, you know, offering, and that you always try to at least have something that has some fragrance to it. Generally, white flowers are the ones that have fragrance the most, and then others from there it goes. You know, or you can also make, let's say, a bed of, you know, nice looking flowers and put one that has a nice fragrance, like it's like gardenias, like that. Because sometimes the ones that do have fragrance are very expensive, so you get one of those and then you have the whole plate for the artique, you know. But some way you try to, as if possible, you try to give some fragrance. I even saw one place, one temple or some puja where they had flowers made out of gold. You know, like they take gold and make them into flowers. You know, it's permanent things. And then they would take, because they didn't have any flowers or something, and then they would take essential oils and put them on that gold flower so that it had smell. Like that. So. Point is, smell should be there. Right. 9. One should not fail to wash his teeth very carefully every day. Right, so not, yeah, yeah. So it takes more than, you know, 3, you know, brushes or 2, like that, yeah.
It is said, it is not said in morning, immediately, no?
Before the puja. Now, you can't go into the DD room without cleaning your teeth. I think, I'm not sure if it'll come up here, but I think Varahadev makes the point. 10. One should not enter the temple directly after sexual intercourse. But in other words, there has to be cleaning, bath, changing clothes, all this kind of things. The mentality has to be clear, like that. 11. One should not touch a woman during her menstrual period, right? Because then the contamination is there, and so it's just the standard thing of contamination. You have to clean yourself after eating or anything like that, going to the smarshans. So it's the same thing. Anything that's not cleaned, then you have to be clean to go into the temple. 12. One should not enter the temple after touching a dead body. 13. Like that. So in other words, if you've been out battling zombies and that, take a bath first, at least wash your hands and things like that. Right? Yeah? No? 13. One should not enter the temple wearing garments of red or blue color, or garments which are unwashed. Unwashed means they're not clean, you know, so then they'll be stinky or contaminated. So you're always wearing clean clothes. Or it can be brand new clothes, and they should always be cleansed before using. You get some new clothes, they should be washed and all that. The woolen, all that, you can put them out in the sun, out in the breeze, like that. You don't have to necessarily wash them in water, but those that are water washable, like that standard, then that is always better.
Maharaj, is it just wool that you can hang out like that, or is it silk you can do that with also?
Silk you can also do, but cotton has to be washed in water. That's the only way it's clean. This is, it was brand new. You know, but,
why
the colors red and blue? Ah, because red, then, how you say, is that mode of... Red means it's just red. So that's what the tantrics wear, the shaktas. If you have ever seen them, they just wear red cloth and red chadar, red turban, eyes are red, you know, the whole thing's red. So we don't use that. But that doesn't mean that ladies don't wear red saris, because it's not just plain red, right? It's got all the gold or other things in it. And it's just used for that time. Otherwise, in red, it's part of the thing. It's not just red. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like you're sorry, not you call it green, but it's also got blue and it's got white and it's got all these things in it. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, like that. And blue, then, that full blue color, and that's the predominant thing, like that, that's Radharani wears that. So, out of respect for that, that doesn't mean light blue and other blues and things like that. That means that full, like, sham blue. That dark, dark blue, like Krishna's color. That we don't wear. Like that, because she wears that. So one is respect for her, and the other is because we don't want to be identified with shaktas. Mm-hmm. Right? 14. One should not enter the temple after seeing a dead body. Right? So after touching, after or seeing. So even if you've seen a bunch of zombies going by, then, you know, how you say? It should be some purification. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. 15. One should not pass air within the temple. Right? It's mentioned before, he's mentioning again. So in other words, he really doesn't like this one. 16. One should not be angry within the temple. Right? He's mentioned that before also. Because it's just the moods out there. It's supposed to be uplifting, inspiring. Right? 17. One should not enter the temple after visiting a crematorium. Right? Because just the air is contaminated, and so then you become contaminated. So you need to take a bath with your clothes on. Right? Yeah. 18. One should not belch before the deity. Right? Also. Yeah. So unless one has fully digested his food, he should not enter the temple. Right? So you, the meals are planned and all these things. That's why they generally don't eat before they start the puja. You know, and then you have lunch. It means the deities have closed. You have lunch, and then there's some time before then the evening again, then there. Like that. 19. One should not smoke marijuana or ganja, like that. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. 20. One should not take opium or similar intoxicants. Right. So opium means then no, what do you call it? Morphine, no heroin, no, you know, wherever they go with that. You know, so it just means similar intoxicants. You're not using marijuana, you're not using, or any of those things, because I think, is ganja means the leaves, or it means the resins? The leaves. But in any case, it's just anything connected there, anything connected with opium, or anything that's an intoxicant. Like that. You know, so no sniffing glue, any of these things, right? Just don't do any of that stuff. You know, cocaine, you know, don't. 21. One should not enter the deity room or touch the body of the deity after having smeared oil over his body. Right? If you put oil on, then you have to take a bath. Right? You do oil for a bath, and then you have that. So you don't put oil on and go to the temple. You have to take a bath first. So, 22. So that wouldn't mean ointments that go into the skin. Right? But it means you should wash your hands. Does that make sense? Like some face cream and that, the kind of, what we're talking about, oil, you're putting on oils and that, they don't soak in. Those have to be clean, because the cloth, it picks up dirt, your cloth becomes dirty, everything becomes dirty. Like that. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Vrindavan.